You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the northwest region of Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and I don't need to tell you that the costs of everything in the United States are on the rise. Americans are becoming a lot more discerning on what we buy and the quality and cost. And this is especially the case for big ticket items. Just go try to buy a house or a car and a college degree. And that's going to be the focus of our talk today. The cost and quality of college education in the United States. Boy, it's a very current topic as well across the country, but in states like Illinois and Iowa. And to do that, I've got a very good guest with you today. He's been on my show before. He's Paul Glastras. He's the editor of Washington Monthly magazine, which I will say proudly that I'm a long-term subscriber, and it's one of the best out there. Paul is the editor, but part of what Washington Monthly does, and a very important part, is publish rankings on colleges, and it's a different approach. And I really thought it was worth sharing today with our listeners today how this is different, why it's important, and why our listeners, I think, should tune in and pay attention to this. Paul, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Robin, it's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of rankings of colleges, it seems, out there, and colleges can cherry pick which ones maybe fit them best, whatever. And I think one of the most prominent is U.S. News, which just came out with theirs. But you've been doing this for 20 years. Let's start with why you decided to do this and why your rankings are different and more important for the average family.
So why I decided to do this, I used to work for U.S. News Report and U.S. News and World Report for 10 years. And I didn't work on the rankings, but, you know, all of us at the magazine had a sense that maybe there was something a little off. And when my friend Jim Fallows became the editor of the magazine in 1996, he hired a person from the National Opinion Research Center in University of Chicago to come in and do a forensic on the magazine's inner workings. And that center wrote a report that said something along the lines of that the way that they weight the metrics makes no scientific or logical sense. And when he shared that report with his boss, the owner, Mort Zuckerberg, of the magazine, and, you know, this was the major revenue driver of the magazine, he was not soon after that escorted out the door. And I quit in protest. I went on and did other things, including work as a speechwriter for President Bill Clinton. And then somehow, we don't know how that happened, the report that was internal at U.S. News wound up in the hands of some journalists at the Washington Monthly, where I became the editor. And we published some pretty major investigations into U.S. News, and ultimately decided, you know, if we can be critics, but that's fine. But if you know, we challenge ourselves to do a better job. So I hired the woman who had written the report and said, help me create some metrics that are better. So to answer your other question, like what are how we do things, it's important to know how they do things. And so U.S. News is, there's about a dozen of these rankings out there. And U.S. News is by far the most popular and best known and most powerful. But the others are variations mostly on the same thing. I'm painting with a broad brush. And U.S. News basically rewards colleges, measures colleges with on three basic ways. Number one, they reward colleges for being exclusive. How few people do you let in, right? It's the logic, it's the idea that college is like a country club. They're very nice, they're very posh, they look old, only the right people are let in, and instead of, you know, golf, they have lectures. And then the second thing that they, and you know, if you only let in people based on who has the highest SAT scores and the best extracurriculars, you know, you're going to disproportionately get students from families who can afford to have their kids in the best high schools and get the best prep. So you're getting the wealthy, you're getting others, but you're mostly getting wealthy kids. The second way they measure higher ed colleges is wealth. How much money do they spend per student? Well, if you're bringing in wealthy students, you know, you can wind up spending a lot on those students. And then the third is prestige. U.S. News does this survey every year, and they ask college leaders, what are the best colleges? And so some college in Iowa says, oh, I guess it's Harvard. I've heard it's good. You know, not that the president of Iowa has any idea what's going on in the classroom in Boston, but okay. And it's sort of like high school. Like, you know who the cool kids are, and they're cool because everybody says they're cool. And there may be something to their cool, but it's all kind of self-referential, right? So all this stuff is kind of a way of saying, a way of guaranteeing that the colleges everybody says are the best wind up at the top of the list, right? And so almost all the rankings, the same 10 or 20 or 30 schools always dominate top of the list. It's Harvard, it's Yale, it's MIT, it's Stanford. You know, maybe it's Berkeley, maybe it's University of Michigan. And this goes on year after year after year. And, you know, think about it this way, Robin. If you wanted a list of the best restaurants in the Quad Cities, and the restaurants reviewer said, you know, the best restaurants are these country clubs. And you say, okay, take your word for it, but I can't eat there. That is of no use to me, right? So the rankings basically tell students the best colleges are the ones you have, don't have a ice cube chance in hell of ever getting into. Don't you feel better now, right? They're not really useful. So we said, and it's worse than that, Robin. All the other colleges want to be at the top of U.S. News. They want to go as high as they can go. So they start aping the behavior of the Harvards, right? And they say, all right, let's stop letting in normal people. Let's just let in all the brainiacs, right? Let's let in all the rich kids. And let's spend more money, because if you spend more money, you go higher on the rankings, right? And so forth. And then suddenly college is more, less democratic, more expensive, right? And it becomes everything we don't want higher education to be. So we just came up with three very different categories. We said, what, and oh, let me say one more thing. College is expensive. Like you said, a car, a house, marriage, you know, there's certain things in life that you spend that are big ticket items. College is even tougher than a car. You can test drive a car. You can't test drive a college. Either it works out for you or you don't. If it doesn't work out, you got to transfer, and that's painful. So you're really trusting someone else to tell you how good the thing is. But it's not just your tax dollars that we worry, your tuition dollars that are dear. Your tax dollars are dear, right? We spend at every level of government in the United States half a trillion dollars on higher education. That works out to about $1,700 out of the pocket of the average taxpayer every year, whether you go to college or not, whether you got kids in college or not. So both your tuition dollars and your tax dollars are in this. And I think we know that there's value in it. That's why That's why we spend the money on tuition. There's value in it. But, you know, a Toyota Corolla is a great car at $35,000. At $150,000, it's kind of not worth it, right? Same car, but the higher the price, the less it's worth it. So we said, all right, what is it that people want? What information that can help them decide whether their tuition dollars and tax dollars are being well spent? We said, number one, we think people want colleges to provide upward mobility. And we define that as recruiting and graduating students of modest means, middle class, working class, poor students, the bulk, right? Providing them with degrees that don't cost too much in tuition dollars, don't load them down with too much debt, and that means something in the marketplace, meaning they'll lead to earnings, they'll lead to income that allows them to enter the middle class or maybe better. So that's one, upward mobility. Two, research. We think people want colleges to create, excuse me, the scholarship and scholars, the new ideas, the new technologies that drive economic growth, that solve global problems, that cure diseases, right? This is an important use of our tax dollars. And you know, if you want to rub elbows with a research scientist, you know, a university that does that is valuable to you as a student. And then three, we call it service. If you open the mission statements of almost any university in the country, somewhere it's going to say the aim of this university is to provide students with the education they need to go out and become useful, contributing members of their democracy. We're the only magazine that holds colleges to that promise. And we do that by measuring things like, do they have good ROTC programs, ROTC? Do the students go on to serve in the Peace Corps? Do they reward people who served in AmeriCorps, the National Service Program? Do they prepare students for professions that are valuable socially but a little bit underpaid, like teaching, like nursing? Do they help students get registered to vote and make it easy to vote, right? The most basic form of democratic participation. So that we do those three things. And when you do those three things, you wind up with a very different list than the U.S. News and the others.
I want to say right now that if listeners are interested in looking at specific schools and their rankings, go to the website, WashingtonMonthly.com. And I just did it in preparation for this, and it's all neatly organized. You can click on and look, find any school that you may be interested in.
Yeah, we don't charge either. All our information is free. Others, yep, you got to pay, but ours is free.
It's all there, and it's very interesting. And this issue, I'll hype the magazine again. The issue has a lot of articles along with it dealing with current issues in higher ed. I just wanted to mention that as well. Let's get right into it, Paul. You've explained the problems with the U.S. News methodology. You've talked about your methodology, which is different. It almost sounds like the working class, more of a working class approach to college, which, yeah, I think is in today's atmosphere is welcome. And so what schools rate the best? Let's start there nationally. And then if you can take a look at Illinois and Iowa in our immediate areas.
So, like I said, if you look at the top of almost every ranking out there, it's the same 20 or 30 schools at the top. Those elite schools do quite well in our rankings, but they don't dominate. Half the colleges in the top 30 are colleges I'm going to guess most of your listeners have never heard about. They're regional public universities. They have like the word state in their name, or they describe the region of a state that they're in. Or they're small liberal arts colleges that really only serve the region. but they do a superior job, or at least as good a job as, you know, the elite schools at providing, you know, just a great education at a reasonable price, and you can get in. And so the highest ranking elite school on our list is Princeton. It's at number 5. And Harvard is pretty far down the line. It's a, you know, like 20 slots below the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley, right? University of Texas Rio Grande Valley beats Harvard, beats it well. I mean, Harvard's a good school, but by our metrics, not as good as the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley, which is down there, you know, where, like you'd say, it's very moderate income, poor, mostly Hispanic part of Texas, and they have just a terrific university there. Above Princeton at number 5, there are 3 campuses of the California State University System, including number 2, Fresno State. Now, other than football, for which the Fresno State is reasonably well known, I'm going to guess none of your listeners know anything about Fresno State. It, like the name says, it's in Fresno, which is in the Central Valley of California. This too is a heavily Hispanic. It's where, you know, the biggest concentration of agriculture in the country is. You've got, you know, fruit farms, grapes, they grow all kinds of stuff, lettuce. But it's pockmarked with great poverty. And students who go to the Fresno State are not charged too much. I think it's like $3,500, $3,800 a year, quite low. They don't get a whole lot of debt. And they, when they leave, they make thousands of dollars more a year than other students at from their demographics. In other words, going to any other school, they would have made, or most, the average other school, they would have made less money. And what kind of job, they're not students who necessarily go on to work at hedge funds in New York. They mostly stay around the Central Valley area, California area. And, you know, there are stories of these kids going to work as managers at the agricultural companies where, as kids, they were picking crops. So that's the kind of upward mobility that we're highlighting in this issue.
That's exactly what it sounds like. That's exactly what you're trying to focus on in your rankings.
That's right. And our number one school, the number one school out of more than 1,400 in the country. Again, I'm sure your readers are barely aware, if at all, of this school. It's called Berea College. It's in Berea, Kentucky, kind of 50, 75 miles from Lexington, if that kind of orients you. Was founded in 1855 by abolitionists, was the first college south of the Mason-Dixon line to educate both blacks and whites, and women, by the way. And they have a century-long plus aim of charging no tuition. And they don't quite get there, but it's very close. Most of the students don't pay tuition. And they do it for several reasons. One is they're a federally designated work college. Basically, every student is on work study. And part of that money goes to pay down their tuition. But another reason is, oh, and by the way, 99% of the student body is on Pell Grants. Now, Pell Grants, as your audience knows, is the federal grant for students, you know, who are from middle and lower income families. So they get Pell money, they get this work study money, but over the course of a century, through small donations, they've built $1.5 billion endowment. And instead of using that endowment to like build buildings and, you know, fancy dorms, they use it to keep costs down. So the students are, it's a academically rigorous program. It's almost all students from Appalachia, almost all, you know, modest income. And they go on to make $5,000 a year more than they would have at the average other school they went to. So it's the best college in America by our lights, and you won't find it prominently anywhere else.
I had heard of it, but I didn't know it in this realm at all, but I had heard of the name. That's just fascinating. And again, this is Paul Glastris, my guest today. He's the editor of the Washington Monthly magazine, one of the best magazines out there. They do college ratings, college rankings, and Paul's been talking a little bit what encompasses their rankings and how it differs from other major sources like U.S. News. I want to focus in on our listening area, Illinois and Iowa. Of our schools that made rankings that you could share that obviously our listeners, I think, would be very interested in hearing?
Yeah, sure. So we also break the rankings up by region. And if you go to our website and you look under best bang for the buck colleges for the Midwest, you're gonna see some interesting schools from your area. And the number one school, Midwest best bang for the buck school, is the University of Illinois Chicago, which is not the University of Chicago, which is famous. Right. It's not Northwestern, which does well, but it's three and U of C, University of Chicago is four. Number one is University of Illinois Chicago. That's the state school. And they win out because they are open access. Not open, but more or less, if you graduate high school and have even halfway decent grades, you can get into the University of Illinois. You can't get into the University of Chicago, but you can get into the University of Illinois, Chicago. They used to call it Circle. And they do just an excellent job of keeping costs down and helping students get jobs that pay. They may not pay like if you went to Northwestern, but they paid darn well. Champaign, University of Illinois Champaign is number five, very, very, fine university. There's quite a few Illinois schools, Governor's State, at number 19, people in the Chicagoland area know that, Wheaton College. Honestly, there aren't many Iowas. You have to kind of get pretty far down our rankings before the Iowa schools start to show up. Sorry to say.
We've got time for one more question here, Paul. We got about 3 minutes. You mentioned in one of the accompanying articles that schools from a cluster of states pop up more prominently. This has some positive connotations, but also potentially negative. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So, if you look at the states that do disproportionately well in our rankings, it's California, it's New York, it's North Carolina, it's Florida. They're red states or blue states. They have two things in common. One, a long history of political support to keep costs down for in-state students of modest means. And number two, very, very centralized governance of their public universities. And that keeps costs down. They don't let the universities get away with things that they shouldn't be doing that help build their prestige to go up on U.S. News, but instead they say, nope, this is for the students, not for your prestige. That has recently, we've learned the downside of that, which is it is that centralized power that conservative governors are using to now go in and do something no governors have ever done before, which is tell professors what they can and cannot teach. And you see that with Ron DeSantis in Florida, because they have quite a centralized system. So it's a double-edged sword, but, it's also why those schools do well in our rankings.
One final thing, we do have just a little bit of time here. You mentioned the breakouts by region. What are some of the other breakouts that you offer? The magazine's website is washingtonmonthly.com. You can go right to it. There's a click. It's really easy to access.
Yeah, the main ranking we call the best colleges for your tuition and tax dollars. And that's the one I was talking about where Berea College is at the top. We have a best colleges for Hispanic students. No one's ever done that. We were the first. We worked with a great group on that. We have a best colleges for research, which if you go and you look at the story and the rankings, you're going to see the attack by the federal government and Donald Trump on research universities. He's going straight after blue universities, you know, universities in blue states and blue cities, but it's also hurting universities in red states in rural areas. So a lot of the Donald Trump policies, they're really directly aimed at what they consider their enemies, the Democrats, but they wind up kind of hurting Trump's own voters.
There's also for liberal arts. I know there's some liberal arts colleges that I teach at one that are ranked as well. So there's a lot of different ways this is sliced and diced and makes it very user-friendly for people that are interested in this topic.
Whole, you said the whole issue's got a lot of great sort of feature journalism that will enlighten, that highlights the rankings, and that I think your listeners will learn a lot from. And they should go and sign up for our newsletter, because we're putting out great political and other news, government news, every day, and we'd love to have your listeners share that.
Absolutely. Again, Paul Glassert's been my guest today. Paul is the editor of Washington Monthly, which, again, I don't mind saying, it's one of the best magazines out there. Some of you may not have heard of it. Go get a copy. Look at it. Check out the website.
Go check out Robin Johnson's writing for the Washington Monthly. He did one of the best pieces ever on working class voters. And just Google Washington Monthly, Robin Johnson, and it's still, I think, one of the best things ever written on the subject.
Well, thank you very much, Paul. This is a very important issue. 2025 college rankings, best colleges for your tuition and tax dollars, WashingtonMonthly.com. Paul, thank you so much for being a guest today.
Thank you, my friend.
You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.